afternoon. This is the hearing in Ninth Circuit, docket number 1680160, in re Jeffrey D. Moffitt. This is a hearing requested by Mr. Moffitt concerning whether the Ninth Circuit should impose reciprocal discipline based upon his disbarment in the state of Arizona. So, Mr. Moffitt, the proceedings here today are being recorded. So, if there's any for a record, it can be arranged. And just to set the stage, I just wanted to reiterate that the scope of the hearing today concerns your ability to practice in the Ninth Circuit only. You're not reviewing any other decisions or having authority to direct any action concerning your ability to practice anywhere else other than in the Ninth Circuit. And as you know, the scope of our review is limited to whether our court should accord respect and deference to the decision of the Arizona court. And as you have noted in your filings, the question is whether you can bear your burden of showing one of three things: either that the state procedure cannot provide you adequate notice and opportunity to be heard, the process component of the inquiry; second, whether the proof of facts established in the want of fair, private, and professional character were so infirm that the court should not accept the state court's decision. That's sufficiency of the evidence inquiry. And then the third question is whether some other grave reason exists that should prevent the court from recognizing the state court's determination. So that's our framework for inquiry. And you're entitled to this hearing today. You're entitled to be represented by counsel that you have chosen to represent yourself. And so before we go further, I would like to have my courtroom deputy administer the oath to you, because I'm going to have some questions, and I want to make sure that everything that we hear today will be under oath. So, proceed. So, I have read and studied your submissions, and I think I have a pretty good idea of just the outline of your arguments. As I think I can post any of those three categories there. So, I think you can proceed with the assumption that I'm familiar with the facts and the legal analysis. So I don't want you to feel compelled to repeat things that have already been in writing. It is your opportunity for a hearing, so I do want to give you some leeway to present your arguments in a manner that I think is most effective and highlight the points that you think are most persuasive in your case. Before we begin, I'd like to have an idea of how you propose to proceed in the matter in terms of presentation of witnesses, documentary evidence, and how much time you anticipate you might want to proceed today. Oh, maybe so. Although this is a small, beautiful room, the acoustics are not great, so please come up to the room.
Your Honor, I prepare a PowerPoint presentation there's three different
Thank you. And even that letter from New Mexico, right? And why didn't you present that letter? Why didn't you? There was some discussion that they were willing to get a waiver. If you signed a waiver, they were willing to go and get New Mexico information. But you didn't sign a waiver.
Well, they asked for the same waiver. I made a whole bag of documents. They asked for, so me looking at the specifics, because of what I think my contender says, basis of this waiver, this waiver is a Schultz document that shows you where it's going. That says you want access to the entire file of New Mexico. And it also asked for, it also asked, Your Honor, for some waiver issues. It asked for my entire medical history. It also demanded some of the other things that they asked me for over my entire financial history.
Well, you had that letter, though, right? You could have presented that to them. It's come up. Here's the letter. It says they're not taking any action against me based on this. That's your proof of exoneration. You didn't present that to them.
Actually, I asked them for a subpoena to, so what I asked them for was subpoena the state of New Mexico and show not only had they been made aware that there was an exoneration, but they had been notified multiple times. That was enough. My discovery in this case was
fine. You never attempted to present the letter that you already had in your possession. That was the best evidence.
What I saw is that when they were asking me for information, they were asking me, saying, here's the file that you gave. So they asked me, they said they had the entire file. That's also when I, most of my experience is fair. And I thought, well, gee, when I was dealing with this entire situation, I thought, let me litigate this case, or litigate any other case. And I started going to, in fact, I talked to a guy by the name of Scott Rhodes, who could get a look at some of the judicial notices regarding sexual misconduct that I submitted. This guy passes on cases that actually establish a challenge of question of judicial. And censure or suspensions. This guy, Scott Rhodes, when he looked at my case early on, he advised me that not only would he not take the case, he said at that time we had already been targeted. I already controlled the card. That the case keeps murder. So he was looking to move this case ultimately because I had been exonerated. I was looking to move it to federal court, go through many re-doctors. I've already got this situation under the city university. It's pending. And what do you know? I run up against a Judge Campbell in Arizona. That, there ended up being actually between Judge Campbell and Aaron Neal. But Judge Campbell's name is not affecting his own Supreme Court. He's the only one that got approval. And so that's why I won't bless you in front of me today, because you actually have jurisdiction. But when you start looking at the definition of what I was accused of, the specific intent, and the other thing is that if you look at the first page, 8.4 correlations, if you see them, I was advised that I committed a crime. There is a body agency that arguably had no prosecutorial jurisdiction to issue a crime. And as I said, without a court's time, I was a crime committed. And the next thing I looked at is that because I was dealing with a potential tax case, federal law covers that the Department of Justice would have exclusive jurisdiction. And so, I looked at that submission with the federal court, and I said, we have jurisdiction to handle state fair law. We also had the first meeting where I was talking about the interesting issue of it may or may not be relevant to this situation, but he opened the claims to not be there on the problem. He seems to be a sitting for the Arizona Justice. And he also indicates that from the small job that he did a CLE, I took a portion of it and I put it in that URL. So I put it in. And now, going to the second page, I talk about manifest injustice. On the right side, when we go about the fair analysis, deprivation of due process and sufficient proof of this matter are grave injustice. But all of this can be in my case. Only my case is really similar to the federal case here. I just happen to be one of the few cases where, except for a couple $100 personal judgments, I don't think the law case, I don't have to say anything. And so, and I wasn't sitting foot in Arizona at the time. So,
let me ask you this question. You admitted to the State Bar of Arizona, or were admitted to the federal bar. Any other State Bar instances?
I happened to serve the State of California Bar by a point or so.
I saw that.
Yeah.
So, but in order to practice in the federal court, in the tax court or in our court, you have to be admitted to the highest bar of the State Court, correct?
Actually, that's not the case.
Not with the tax court.
Yes, sir. Or even the state courts are the federal courts. You have to be admitted into a jurisdiction by the state of the Supreme Court. And residency for admission into 35 other states, the technical requirements, so on, to what we're trying to resolve. I asked for the reasoning, and when you look at the rule of federal law, that's all in that first process. So I actually could have been admitted into another bar to summons. But my thought is that if I'm able to show that I was mistreated to some degree, then I can be admitted into another state court. There's a precedent in some of the most cases where somebody were opposed to be watched. So they had to be admitted to a separate court. And you would review that
one. And I don't need to distract you from my presentation. However, I think you've covered it.
Right. Now, long story of it is, going back on that side, is that I have a lot of other attorneys are facing this mountain of problems that's being under control. And my case, this individual, the investigative reporter, didn't apply to the state investigator, nor did she actually sign her own report. So this report that they came out for isn't signed. And the respondent, Bob O'Neill, was supposed to have been by a judge. Really, we get back into the kind of dynamics that Bob O'Neill, is the only person who calls to themselves a judge in Arizona that was not either elected or appointed by the governor with consent by the Senate. So, and I'll be positive that positions had actually been looking up. Now, going over to page 3, State Bar convicted me by default. So, my entire response to the brief. And so I had like 25 minutes. And talking with the jurisdiction, statute of limitations, constitutional issues, and rather than dealing with a single one of those, and this goes back to the process. And case law says that when you're actually in the process, you actually have to have your ability to get information and the ability to can your argument serve? And when you go to a criminal trial, to have your information totally removed and say, no, we're giving you a default judgment, that's not being prosecuted. All the discovery requests were denied. He didn't request information. Subpoena requests. And all my discovery, but also your honor, shows that the process wasn't really given to me. Now, if you go back and you look at what I was accused of, and then you go and compare myself to the other people in comparison, well, you know, this guy on tape, the attorney general, was setting up a brothel, having hookers, and setting up a go forward and having sex. This guy, as well as I see the volume there, 1826, this guy had a breath in him, having water charges. This guy became the state bar president the next year. Now, the next thing we have, and I also threw it in my own brain, is there was a Supreme Court justice attorney that was also accused of convicted of solicitation. And there was an initial notice of that. Now, going to page 4, sex question 1, which is during this time, and Brady. On right side there, Brady violations provide Ninth Circuit with de novo review. So I'm asking for, because I say there's Brady violations, I think I have to prove them. I know that they're just looking at just the narrow part of that we covered earlier. I think they're able to look at it from a more global view. Arizona was advised by exoneration by New Mexico. They did not convey that to the market.
As a moment ago, the government is discussing this point, right? I thought you were saying that they didn't have the information from Mexico and that you wanted to get that in front of them, and that the only way you could do that was through this waiver that was overbroad and you were unwilling to sign it. So,
that's not quite what I was saying. What would you want me to do for you?
Well, was the exoneration, you said Arizona was advised of exoneration by the
judge, and all the conversations going back and forth with people on the 7th, the prosecutor, she indicated that she was aware of my exoneration. And she said, hey, my understanding was that she actually had a copy by the statements that she had made me. But what she was asking, she was asking for, show me the exoneration. She scans for the entire phone. Is it from a, from the state point? I thought it was overbroad. And if you can explain the findings on that, I have also seen the question being that we're overbroad and I made requests to make that small. But, and as I said before, he's in the original case in 2013. Basically, the exoneration documents by Sparky.
Yeah, just about every other moment. Why do you think it was overbroad for Arizona to request the entire Mexico proceedings record?
Your Honor, just from the standpoint of, I don't know personally why I mean that what was in there from the one statement. We want the exoneration document. Not a problem. What's also interesting is that this time, I believe, is because that's the exoneration document, was also sent to Lisa Chalmers. She was also advised that they might put this into the document's copy of the information that was sent to Lisa Chalmers. And my understanding is that Lisa also provided that to Arizona, so my understanding is that they had it directly, they had it from the copy from Lisa Chalmers. And they were being told it for myself, but when they asked for an entire file, for some reason that seemed kind of shaky to me. And I thought, you know, got to find people, right?
So, if I understand it correctly, your belief is that Arizona disciplinary proceedings had actually before the same letter that your colleagues are raising.
Right.
Thank you. So, they were aware that New Mexico had concluded that there was not an attorney-client relations record because of it, they were not going to go forward with the thing. But, of course, they also included some cautionary language.
Yes, so all the letter of caution on the case, you know, just to step out of the section, but, you know, what it was, but again, it wasn't, they didn't find a comment, they didn't find a very comment, and in this country, they controlled, you know, even the, you know, scrolling recommends, he clearly wasn't using the trademark conduct or using the trademark. Now, Arizona was also advised of extortion. Now, my understanding is the Martinell was not advised of extortion. And one of the things that's concerning about is that Martinell is not itself an extortion and by friends and business partners of Judge Hogan. One of them happens to be previously Robert Cavill, who happened to be a neighbor of Mark Dixon, who submitted a declaration to stand back. And one of the things that I found after this is I found that Mark Cavill represented a PhD from Tucson. The name escapes me, if you would choose to call me something that I did not want to hear. But she was on the Martinell, and she advised, she walked off by saying the Martinell was really just a rubber stamp for me. Now, on one side, I cover this in the studies that I have of judges and attorneys who engage with Section 1997 notice forms. And now, there's also an interesting thing that's taking place in Arizona, which we have some capital cases are finally found prosecutorial forms now. And then, Justice Kaczynski's pointed out to the Postal Court on this conduct by Dark Bates, one of the things that I want to complain is the individual that in front of, or was in front of, is literally what is allowing some of these things to happen. You know, going over how I'll cover that in the news, really what was offered was to exchange a photo. And the fact that it was a photo of the man, as is seemingly unsensitive settings, it was having to be legal, or it's looking pretty. The fact that this is an all female, over 50, that happened to be perfectly legal. So that's the fact that there's thousands of cases that some say, some people in the United States, and therefore, tagging that combat action was a little bit, what was this, extremely excessive, essentially a First Amendment violation.
What about a physical?
Well, physical, the word physical, although it wasn't raised, the person that has jurisdiction, which I see, is my wife. I can't believe we should turn her down. But physical, from a standpoint, physical as far as solicitation, covered in your honor.
So let me just ask you, you didn't say anything that occurred, I'm just focusing on the exchange between your prospective client and you,
right,
via that Facebook Messenger. Is it your contention that communication that you gave to your client is, well, as a prospective client, was consistent with your oath as an attorney and a member of the bar?
I would say, Your Honor, that the until the person becomes the client, and this is one of the with this where New Mexico takes the position to become the client, you have to have some an agreement. There has to be a contract of services and money to the agency. You're dealing with actions between just a gentleman and
the agency. Wait. This is a situation where a prospective client came to you and said, I want your help with this tax issue. And I'm having trouble getting $75 together for a consultation. And then you offered to accept, in lieu of $75 cash, a new photo of her or physical. So just leaving it at that, even though there had not yet been a signed agreement, is it your position that that solicitation by an attorney is an acceptable way to conduct business by an attorney?
I see one of the cases that indicates that one of the things in the same rules as any other business that has the same license. And from the standpoint of, And do I see that conduct that doesn't agree is can be censored to be a forceful legal concept that defined 1980? And then we send you through the book 1980. We were able to do this thing. We were able to use it not just in your actions, but your thoughts. And here's what we're looking at. This is my thoughts. Right now, my thoughts that are not illegal can now basically give me an assassination or a threat word. I think that oversteps the law. I think that when a non-profit member basically says, we can control what you say when you say it to non-clients, I think that overreaches what the bars are able to do. So from a standpoint of the fact that something physical, there was no sex component there. And from a standpoint of what I was charged with, required poorly specific acts of really great sexual misconduct that were outside the norm. And I'm interested in your point of here's a rule 1.8J actually allows sexual clients to be as long as they can, but before the representation started. So from a standpoint of there wasn't any sex, there wasn't any statement of sex, there wasn't any intent there. But we also have the fact that rule 1.8J allowed it, and we also have just recently in California they're beginning to say, well, we want to step back from our attorneys and have sex with their clients. So from the standpoint, if I can actually typically have sex with a client, as I just said before, representation, if I had had actual sex with this person before I was representing them, then it would be permitted anyway.
I just wanted to argue that there were 15 minutes left for your introductory presentation. So, there's something that's really important. What's
the next one would be 8.4, one point in case of the included definition. The definition of food is insidious. I cover some of those on my volume 4 in the excerpts. Are the 7:32 through 7:34. And I don't know, there has to be specific acts, defined acts contemporaneously for sexual conduct, and has to, and none of these are a prison, even though they are California lawyers and all. The next thing we have is the statute of limitations. Statute of limitations on this movement right here. On the past, that was filed in 2015. And this one, 8.4, was also a written conviction that would fall into 8.4B as well as before recognition of the conviction of a foreign element. Now, if we go over to the first part of this, is that also in the 8.4, they, in their settlements, thought that all the issues were not just all the offenses. So when we look at manifest injustice, that this, and if I'm essentially being popped with a for a morality decision, it's the top center of all the violations of offenses. We go to the next thing, we have pulpit. What is the punishment for a solicitation here? So, typically, it happens to be a one-year ticket. We have, I think, Martin Sapp, who got caught for solicitation. And 2014, he's guilty of multiple course of felony. He also had solicitation charges in Tucson. And he's, you know, trying to show that it's fair treatment. You have a Tucson case, literally the case is left behind there, offering to be held off for charges they're actually undergoing. And rarely is there a case that's from going over to the, whatever with the Department of Treasury has exclusive jurisdiction under this Title 31. Arizona was made aware of it before this violation of due process. So it has exclusive jurisdiction in the Arizona Planning Bill. The part about that is the problem with the legal.
I'm sorry, my friend is being asked. Your point is that because it's a potential client wanted to consult you on a federal tax matter,
right?
The state of Arizona cannot consider anything that occurred in the course of the transaction vis-a-vis your membership in the Arizona State Bar.
Right.
So you say, my opposition is that discrimination is what you're dealing
with tax matters. And if you actually had a tax loan, then the exclusive jurisdiction for discipline that federal government with the Department of Treasury. Now, as we go through 2014, New Mexico, it's the Health and Integration. I also don't know how he was appointed. He was appointed by the Supreme Court of Justice, which was what's interesting. In how he was appointed, he was supposed to be the only attorney, or the only judge, or in this, in one problem, consider that appointed that way. Now, what's also interesting is that, as we go on to page 10, Arizona states that they defer under holding to the jurisdiction of the action to replace it. And in this situation, it did not, so it was a denial of its due process. And Arizona was advised, actually, there's an issue, and actually acknowledged it. Again, what I consider Brady violations. Now, if we go over to how O'Neill became involved as a judge, it's very interesting. He had a bid to pay Ross Williams, right at the same time as he was being appointed. He was a multi-time felon who was just convicted for, I think, the seventh time. For seven, but he was working for O'Neill, and he was convicted. Or charged with their conviction for selling beneficial, favorable distribution decisions in HD4. And then what ended up happening after that is that O'Neill started doing some of the cases that have already been, you know, in front of this court. What happened to be with Lisa Bouchon, who I've read the declaration that she was involved in earlier, literally hold on to jurisdiction, stop the grand jury investigation, and regarding prosecution for my father, and turned out to be some people that he was connected to. The, now, switching over to page one, now we have the depository on the standard, and we can hear some attorneys taking out of Philadelphia. We found that the investigations doesn't suggest it was not, was also, was traced back to Arizona.
What way was it traced to Arizona?
What's that?
When you say traced back to Arizona, what's that?
It was just that they're going to be trading back and forth, you know, partially facing jokes and essentially explicit images. And the judicial commission was looking over this file that was going to be involved in the thing. And although there were several school judges that were embarrassed when they stepped out, it was not a single judge that was found to have, I'm aware of, it was found to have actually violated the convicted judicial commission and also disbarred. Now, my position there is that the judge has received, I might say, that poorly, and some of the attorney should be careful. We also have the same thing that happened with Judge Sinzinski several years back. He had a pornography collection, and when he thought he had some of the pornography on it, and it was embarrassing to him that he really lived to be good access to it. He went in front of the judicial commission and said, if you're involved, you can get it. He said, yeah, we should just keep it private. I mean, the apostles weren't coming out here, you talk about these elements, and when we look at these in moral terms, you have to look at the moral terms and consider framing as a mix of willfulness or evil intent. And the fact that I said at one point in time, when you picture something physical, that doesn't satisfy.
What I think ended up happening, Your Honor, is that I stubbed my toe, excuse me, so this is a small offense, and it's going to be a small offense here in the answer to. And the reason why I think I was tagged was the same thing that I think these persons were involved with, is my wife happened to be running for state senate. And the area that she was involved in, they happened to deal with land developers that had built out. From there's been Phoenix developers that have built out $300 million up to my documentation is information about campus passing the name as a family was pushing for connecting some of the same people that post office in the and some of the tools and goal was happen to be part of an actual past client of O'Neill's, who's happened to be an individual who was involved in representing, or he's involved in representing also in the courthouse in a few local cases. But he stepped in the Amazon case, and she had a grand jury investigation, and he ended up disbarring her, and he also, in the sentence, denied. Actually impacting the grand jury investigation. So that there's kind of a connection. How does this supposedly relate back to somebody's family? Now, the other thing that's kind of interesting is we have criminal charges regarding Sterling and Childress standing right now in New Mexico for extortion. And the FBI's involved with it. The action right now is the fact that Sterling was asking his wife for children
is the dynamic of children saying yes to this party because the boy is still growing. So he's going on in question. And then on page 15, what's the first thing? He has the same bar of California murdering sex offenses. He's in the courts. He's already recently came out saying he's 205 complaints against California judges. And that lets you go to see time to move forward on 203. When you go over to some things we've already covered, when you look at actually culpable people, decent declaration.
Wait, see, we're talking about in two areas. Part one, what are you talking about? O'Neill and his bailiff and his authority to act and his connections. So with respect to that, with these issues that you raised, all of the underlying factors that you're talking about today, with these matters that you raised, state court proceedings,
Your Honor, I was denied the ability to present
anything. Your Honor, what about that motion for recusal? You didn't have any, nobody told you what you could or couldn't include in the motion for recusal. You made sort of an allegation, a claim of unfairness or inability on the basis for recusal, but there wasn't much in the way of supporting facts. That's what the independent attorney found when he dismissed the recusal motion. So my question is, why did you raise this at that stage?
The O'Neill of the Wall Street Bowl standpoint is, when a man has stood up to recuse O'Neill, I actually would have done a removal action and done a separate family cause of action for that right. And in the existing Ninth Circuit, we can have a stand conflict. You can debate the two judges restrictions to recuse themselves. What I found out, and there happens to be multiple cases, even by the Arizona Supreme Court, is that O'Neill was one of the most recused individuals, and he was a Superior Court judge number two. That when he became a bar judge, he, on a regular basis, denies recusals. I was advised by an individual that he never grants them.
Yeah, I'm asking some of the questions. Why is it that you're talking about today? You never presented this to the Superior Court, so to speak, to Superior Court. How did that proceed?
I presented that there was use of the courts. I presented that there had to be some connections with the union in my statement, saying that we've got some different factors.
Where did you present that in what document?
I presented it in the document, not in my own. I believe that in my federal removal action, and the briefing that I did for federal court there, that it ended up being denied and came to me back. That was made part of the record. But I started to show that there was problems of O'Neill and some of his land dealings and how he was going after Republican attorneys and also individuals that had to be satisfied with
So your position is these issues were well presented to Arizona. Arizona was disbarred proceedings because your federal court removal papers included that, and those papers were made part of the Arizona disbarred proceedings. Now let's really ask you the same question with respect to a number of issues that you raised about disparate treatment opinions, this language, and that you're saying that other people did other things that were as bad or worse, and they didn't get the same kind of treatment that you got.
Right.
do you raise that issue and present charts like these concerning those at the sort of treatment to the Arizona disciplinary proceeding?
In my request for admission and my subpoenas, I sought for going after whistleblowers were denied. I was looking for, I was going after some of the session conduct with employee L.M., which is also pretty well documented in this one.
Well, you have to, you have solstice meetings, but you're now, you're representing today assertions of fact that, I guess you could say to this court, you want this court to take this into account, but you didn't present this to the state court you were looking for, but you didn't, you knew about this or didn't know about this. This, you never tried to get this in front of the
plaintiff. I wish it was the state court in the first place, but also it's the state, that's what I heard the state court. So, the fact that I was, Your Honor, in my response in brief, in the first part, the jurisdiction arguments, constitutional arguments, that was really well briefed there. In the discovery actions that you're looking at, I had on table 135, plus that was some shady things. We also covered the oral evidence being made aware of some problems with our names and the connections of how this claim was being run. And so the fact that literally everything that I was putting forward, it was done so that you see that she could have always done that for when I started seeing her, when I was being phone tell, I wanted to make sure that I put everything in the record. I wanted to show that there was, and maybe there was some teeth I didn't wash on, but I was trying to show that as best I could, that I was dealing with an individual that was part of a bigger picture, and that literally, my deal was really a target to be used. In fact, my congressional race and my wife's state's numbers.
Okay. So what are the things that you want to say is the target that you want to say is? So, what we do, we can
deal with it.
Okay, let me see if you can tell us this. Okay, yeah, you just referred to your response in brief.
Right.
And so, and that was, what stage of the proceedings where would you find that brief? That's 3 years of your referring to. And who was responding to?
Well, that was to the allegations that I had, you know, that I was being charged by the bar. Obviously, the bar said, you know, you're being brought up on other charges, and you've committed an act, let's say, 24 action. And
is these different federal rules and Arizona rules that prohibit them to even move forward on the case.
How is it this was filed in the district court?
I believe that one was filed in the state court, or actually in the one that I filed a variation of that in federal court, and I filed one in
the district
coincidence or I have had two knife encounters. My wife has had several death threats. Is that not his law or is there a connection? But if you go back to Commonwealth, there's things that are wrong. Special limitations for solicitation. However, that's not essentially a one of the things I was tagged for was not on station, not being in the I had a motion for refusal from the judge, and so he had issued orders and pulled them back. And then when he refused to deny, then he essentially received the mail, "You will be in a hearing." This was right around Christmas time. And I received them 3 days after the hearing.
So, Susan, for interrupting you, according to the record, it looks like you received all those documents by electronic mail as well. Weren't you signed up for electronic notice of the proceedings?
I was signed up for electronic notice. However, the rules require that you are given 5 days from receipt. You had 5 days. And
so, did you receive electronic notice, but you didn't receive paper notice? Is that your point?
That's why we're being false today. It's the time that we've got to propose it. It's that
before you sit down. Right, proceed.
Start. When I was working on categorizing some cards at the house that I had traded, what cards do you think I ran into that may have precipitated this whole thing?
I'm sorry, that's okay. You're way ahead of all of us.
What was your What was your dad's profession? And what problems did you see by them asking me for my dad's retirement order?
My dad's profession is to work for the bank, Bank of America, officer of the bank, bank laws, and he also has another position where I was a certified judge of jury. And then the state-approved certified program, we have licensed clinical social workers, we have MFTs, marriage family therapists, and myself, and the name as a counselor, certified counselor. And one of the things that was always emphasized was confidentiality. HIPAA laws, privacy laws. And so when the request came to Jeff requesting his information, not just the letter, not just the file from New Mexico, just from the government, but the Mexico, I noticed that this was so official from all the training that I've had and working with the banks and working in the profession. It was just on a piece of paper. It wasn't even a corporate letter in the bar. So that was the first thing. It was not authentic. It didn't have a sign on it. It had a cover letter. And then in the cover letter, it had the authorization for release of his records. And in that, I'm like, wait a minute. There was the tax returns. There's such thing as financial privacy laws. They want to see your academic records, your educational records, which is the relevancy. What is the relevancy of seeing your financial records? What's the relevancy of seeing your education records? Mental health. Oh, my goodness, here we go. Any mental health records you have. That is, that falls under HIPAA confidentiality rights laws. So, yes, did I encourage him? We have no idea what they will do once they get these records, what they will do. And one of the things that I can tell you that going back to doing my findings and research, one of the departments I used to work in was the fraud department of the Pacific Bank and our charge of legal department. And so I still carry those tools even into our law firm. And so I was able to see in the hand of Ben Keys, he had been charged and was found guilty of breach of confidentiality of another attorney. So I said, okay, this is how it's
history. Ms. Mother, I want to make sure we cover everything. And I understand the question was asked about your concerns about privacy. You have explained your concerns about privacy and why you are advising to be wary of waivings. So I just want to make sure that we keep moving, and I don't think you need to embell this more. I think you made the point.
Okay, and then, were you involved in sending helping me draft a letter to the bar regarding the narrowing with their request was? Did they seem to respond appropriately based on your knowledge of HIPAA and financial privacy? Were they willing to accommodate us or how any? Okay. Do you recall in the decision document that they came claim that I was entirely cooperative regarding that? Did you recall in the decision document that I got from the Arizona Bar that they stated that I failed to comply with the request and they didn't convey that the bar attempted to work with them on that?
Right.
Next thing would be when did you recognize that things were going sideways with this series of process? Do you remember how far into it, and what was the dynamic that made you think that maybe I was being hooked up?
Excuse me for a moment, I'm sorry. Before we move on, there's a question on this request for a waiver. So you sent a letter in response to the first very broad request for waiving. I have a letter dated August 14th, 2015, in which you contend that the request for rights to medical records, academic records, financial records, was overblown. And you objected to that. And then I see there was a letter that came from the state bar that was just referring to this in your last question before this one. But on September 3rd of 2015, April Landry sent you a letter saying that the state bar received your correspondence related to authorization to release information and noted to you that she had amended the language to be specific to records maintained by the Disciplinary Board of New Mexico. So it appears from the record that I have in front of me that very broad request was then substantially narrowed, asking for a waiver, which reads, I do hereby authorize and consent to the release of any and all information maintained by the Disciplinary Board of New Mexico, requested by the State Bar of Arizona or the Arizona Supreme Court, or any agents or representatives of any of these bodies. So that the waiver originally that caused courts to be started seems to have been narrowed to address the request for information from New Mexico.
And because it wasn't the final ruling, it was all records, and because of the
Okay.
One of the things that we have talked about before, Your Honor, is what they asked for from New Mexico was the finding. It was all records, and that was one of the problems that we had. But again, it was the end result. That's one of the reasons why I took the position that I wanted to provide them with the, as opposed to being an expansive set of documents
today. And New Mexico requested documents from you and information from you in the course of their investigation.
Four, three letters and back and forth.
But they didn't ask you for any information. So, what kind of concern did you have about asking New Mexico to do what they had?
Because I had the same concern that we had with them asking for, and it was the end result. And I had no idea what was in it. I knew it was buried. I knew that the complaint was the same complaint that had been sent to the Arizona Department of 13 and then sent to California. But I didn't know what was in the entire file, and I thought it was a really problem. So, that's what I did. I hope to be able to present just the end result.
But in the letter of caution that you received,
yes.
The New Mexico Chief Disciplinary Council
yes.
said, I'm quoting from the letter right now, but it said, inquiry be made regarding the disposition of any complaints filed against you accompanied by your written waiver of confidentiality. The person making such an inquiry will be told only that this complaint was dismissed. As I say again, it is hoped, however, that the criticism and suggestions contained herein will be viewed by you as constructive and utilized to avoid further problems. So that you knew that New Mexico was not going to give them any confidential information, but not only the dismissal of the
actually, I didn't complain. My understanding is that I was giving them access.
It says, should an inquiry be made regarding the disposition of any complaints filed against you and accompanied by your written waiver of confidentiality, the person making such an inquiry will be told only that the complaint was dismissed.
Right, this is your written waiver. It was for the entire file, and as opposed to what you let us know, that what is the dynamic, and that's where we find this was successful. And that's where, and it was, if you put the data that you're now saying that you're going with OTS for the financial education, to the Sea Bar in Mexico that we found out happened after early end of course.
Can we set a time frame on this, please? What did you?
This is in the second accident, right? Was it accident? It relates to a.
What was when did that occur?
Right around 2014.
So this was the
okay.
Can you answer the question?
What was the traumatic brain injury? Where was that in my brain? What did they say it impacts? And what did they say that impacts? Did we make a decision because of our right for office to not want this out there at all? Now, going with, is it correct that you started investigating other, say, the process of the aerosol bar?
Disseminate, and after myself
another individual that we hired out of New York. We investigated 75 cases. And those 75 cases were attorneys where there was an Arya disclosed, and they had mental health problems. They had drug or alcohol problems, sex problems. They had required sessions for psychological treatment. It's all disclosed, studied. The court, the bar in the court, puts this information on the internet. And so that was the reason why we decided not to disclose it, because we felt that we did become a victim as these other 75 attorneys that have had their information disclosed to the internet. We're all American citizens. There are some attorneys who are American citizens who should be entitled to having not having their health records put on the internet.
Because most people are used to that. What did you find out about the head of the med director and how did that project work in particular?
That's the med was the bar director. It's called their mental assistance program at the bar. And the option that that individual had been sentenced to prison for 7 years. He served about 2 years of the 7 year sentence. He's an ex police officer. He also killed another individual. And that's all for the records and the information. He's not going all the way up to the jail support. They found him personally. They found him not guilty to that. He's still on all the stuff shot at another person. And also found that he had been charged Arizona Board of Behavioral Health examiners charged with violating HIPAA laws.
Was that as it relates to attorneys?
As it related to when he was guilty and disclosing attorneys' confidential mental records.
Okay. Now switching over to the investigation that you found about the April Landry. Tell us what you found there.
April Landry was assigned by Nicole Cassetta. Nicole Cassetta is the bar counsel. Prosecutor. And after we began to do an investigation, so we began to investigate everyone that was associated with April Landry. Put himself out as a bar investigator. And April Landry is not a state-approved licensed investigator. I believe we did make the record that we had received a letter from the state of Arizona, public safety department, school detective, validating that April Landry is not an investigator. I also investigated her on LinkedIn and found that Pierce was prominent. And attorneys have been practicing for, I think, since 2002. And here's an investigator that is now assigned on his case. She has only been hired into the bar as a paralegal. She's only paralegal, I believe, for 3 years, and then she's promoted 2 years as an investigator. And then here's an investigator that has a call in her hands, and attorneys calls of her hands is in the entire life. Someone who is not even a state-approved, state-licensed investigator.
Did April Landry sign the investigative report?
The investigative report against Jeff, it was not signed.
Who did we, or who did you find, was entirely responsible for the whole budget of the state bar? What individual is in charge of the financial commitments for prosecution running the bar? Okay, so Judge O'Neill is financially responsible for all aspects. Did the next part of this is, did you start seeing some similarities between my case and say, G. Ross, or the case?
Yes, I'm close to G. Ross.
Was her, was her response or to the party claim also removed? Now, do you think it has anything to do with that Victorville $30 million scam that was covered on the annuals? Thank you. During your investigation, did you find any attorney generals or assistant attorney generals or district attorneys that were involved in prosecution, RICO prosecutions, that have been retaliated against? Who was that? During the investigation of my case, did you find or hear of other cases where connected individuals had their law practice shut down and their license removed more as a political favor than because they were actually committing crimes? Now you were doing some work for me regarding the makeup of the bar and in comparison to Supreme Court case National Bar Examination. What did you see that there was a problem with that, with the Arizona Bar was set up with National Bar Examination? Is there a similar process that the IRS requires a specific agency to supply from all agencies? Do they have that?
I don't remember that. they had to take these things wrong, tests that they had to prove to the federal government, the government to then give them another redetermination that they are a quasi-governmental agency.
Okay, so that's saying, okay, we found, or you found, that the state bar was in violation of the April 2016 Amtrak case by being a corporation. It was also attempting to be a regulator because it was also a market participant. Could you tell me how you found the Arizona bar was a market participant? What was it using as far as funds?
Association
It's so unfortunate to see all these attorneys that are at risk, and even the law students that are coming through, all these attorneys that are at risk.
Certainly, you did an analysis for me, and it talked about some of the norms of Rule 9 or something regarding admissibility of evidence. And this case is based on admissible evidence. And one of the problems that we had with this case was the report that the bar had, that started at page 1 compared to the information we provided to the bar.
Page
1
You can make a statement if you'd like to file this statement.
This is a paragraph. I was taught as a child to have this respect for authority of police, police officers, and judges. My husband, the decision came down from the judge. I looked at that decision document, the disbarment. That disbarment was not issued by a judge with a valid oath of office. I think we have a copy of that oath of office that has not been signed. He has not signed his oath of office. So he has not signed his oath of office. From the research that I've gathered through public resources, then the decisions he makes is null and void. The other thing that is very credible, all the charges that were filed against Mr. Bonta and my husband, it's amazing. Not a single one has ever been adopted as statutory law, criminal law, or even civil law within Arizona. So how can we prosecute or claim to prosecutors who haven't even adopted these laws by law? It's just like if you're sentencing a man to death, how can you sentence someone to death, taking away their career, their livelihood, when your laws and your rules are nothing but policies and rules not adopted by any Arizona law?
Okay, I do have one question that I forgot to ask you earlier, and this concerns the subpoena. Yeah. Were you ever successful in getting any subpoenas issued in the state court disciplinary proceedings?
No. When I was in the task force, I also asked them to issue the subpoenas, and one of the judges did say, it only takes a little bit of court that issued their statements. And I gave them the authority that they had, and the judge said, that was like that, a senior judge for 14 years, and I didn't know it was actually authority. So,
He said that the issues that he really never did want to know, the judge happened to say, when I received the notice, he was a practice, and he was surprised at what's going on. And I kind of think that indicated to me that they were willing to deny that I recognize there was some problems with, from in attempting to get some witnesses here, one, the issue of several subpoenas, because more than the same darn thing under federal court rules.
So the only discovery that you specifically asked for from O'Neill was the request for admissions. Once you submitted, and then you sent forward to it, and then you filed a subsequent explanation of those requests for admissions. Is that correct?
I asked for subpoenas, a request for admissions. And I think I did a request for production documents. I think I did three different requests.
Are those in the record that you provided us? Do you know where they are? Let me do this. This is Harry's filing. One additional thing, too, is I'm going to give you an opportunity to nail this down. And so, in addition to the matter we already discussed, that you have to recover, so I'll give you a similar amount of time to also submit a list of all the discovery requests you made in the Arizona disciplinary proceeding. And I think what we can do is we can do a brief order after this hearing that will remind you of what we're expecting from you and when we're expecting it, so you don't have to remember it. So thank you for appearing today. Thank you for testifying today. I also want to commend your rooting gallery, who was very well behaved today. And I want to commend you even for being here and supporting your family. It's important to do that. I hope you continue to do that all your life. We will await the 2 weeks. We will receive your supplemental submission.
In regard, it's 2 weeks from Friday. Or 2 weeks from Friday?
2 weeks from Friday. And then after that, I will prepare a reporting recommendation about the proper disposition of this matter to the court. That will be sent to you, and you will have an opportunity to file a response to that objections if you so choose. And the report and recommendation will be submitted to a 3-judge panel.
court, and they will decide whether to adopt my report and recommendation or not, or schedule for the proceedings.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have just one point for you. I may see that in this case, based on what you see, because of some things going on in Arizona, I am hoping that the determination that you come up with, besides just clarifying my issue, you also post the Arizona legislature to deal with the way this process exists. And then, if you follow on my analysis, that maybe it's actually been done multiple times, that the power that a state, basically a non-profit division can have, especially with some shady backgrounds, maybe there needs to be some modifications in what we measure in your decision. I hope that one of those things that we can look forward to, and say, here's a federal judge that says, hey, there was some overreaching or something like that, and maybe this is when we're judging the census, and here's our base in Arizona, and we see prosecutors like Rich Alexander, at least on the show, who are literally prosecuting them. He doesn't come with juries next to Justice Brenner Moriarty, who is working for at least the Michigan. It's one of the few cases that should actually say, we're not going to represent who this harm. We're putting this thing together, and we're looking at from San Diego. What I'm hoping is that you and your brilliant PhD and Kircher can all give us a quote that will help change her own home. I mean, that's maybe not a big tool, but that's one of those things. As much as I had to go through, as much as my life is in danger, her political, the fact that she's still deciding on this is one thing, but the fact that if a decision comes out that says that Arizona may have been involved in some easy political manipulation, in fact, congressional race and Senate race, maybe we should not do that. That might help change things in the future. So just don't stand by and watch it, which right now is going to be something that's extremely relevant for the future political California politics as well as Arizona.
Thank you.
Thank you. This matter has been terminated temporarily and will be submitted after you receive your certificate of filings. Thank you.
Thank you.